Hello, my name is Cesar Alvarez, and we're starting the August 10th, 2016 Ask Me Anything meeting. It looks like it's going to be a smaller meeting today, but we had a lot of people send in questions for this meeting, and we'll see if they show up and they can clarify those questions if I can't answer them. But I'm going to go through the questions in order that they got sent in by the people at this meeting, and we'll see what kind of fun things we have. And I've not looked at these questions ahead of time. I like answering the questions on the fly. I don't know. I think it gets a little bit more entertaining when I haven't had time to think about them too long. All right, so let's start with the first question. What other market statistics or symbols do you find most useful when developing trading system for indexes such as the S&P 500? So I don't do very many strategies on a single instrument. I'm actually not a big fan of that. I find it a little bit too easy to overfit the data, and just not getting sample sizes large enough. But when I am developing systems that way, I definitely, I like the VIX. That's one of the things you mentioned was the VIX. That's definitely one of my favorite things to use on that. Yeah, of course, even the simple moving averages, simple 200-day moving average, 50-day moving average, those do also overall good thing. It also depends on what kind of strategy you're doing, whether you're trying to do a short-term strategy or a long-term strategy. That really also depends what you want to do. The interesting part, new highs, new lows, I believe I did a blog post on that a while back ago. That had some promise. Personally, I've not found much on the upside, downside volume. So, but again, like I said, I don't spend a lot of time just trying to develop the strategies for a single index. Like I said, when I'm doing stuff like that, VIX, simple moving averages, or even exponential, just out moving averages, whether it be simple or exponential. And like I said, the blog post on new highs and lows showed some promise. All right, let's go on to the next question. Any experience with neural networks or artificial intelligence for someone who has some experience with TradeStation or MetaStock? I have not spent really any time doing any work on that front. I've read a couple books. My biggest concern along that front is the whole overfitting to the data. Depending on how hidden what factors are into it, it may be hard to understand whether you've overfit the data or not. I know you can try to do things with in sample, out of sample, but that runs into a whole other issue in my book. Unfortunately, there's not much I can really help you or point you towards on that. I think Howard Bandy, his last book, covers some of this, and his books are really good, so I definitely recommend taking a look at that. I don't remember what the name of the book is, but if you go to his website, just search Howard Bandy, B-A-N-D-Y, and Amy Broker. You'll find his website. He's done several books, all quite good. That's what I would recommend, probably a good place to start because they also have to do with Amy Broker. I know you said TradeStation or MetaStock, but I'm a big Amy Broker fan. All right, let's go on to the next question. Let's see. I'm curious if you have investigated a type of exit, what I would call adaptive. That is, one that goes beyond dynamic exits that use the indicator threshold value rather than a fixed price target or stop loss. Instead, this exit strategy would also incorporate other sorts of price action that occurs after entry, such as a key reversal bar that might statistically suggest a prolonging trade despite overbought reading or short-term indicator to PRSI. They call for exiting the trade at a loss. I want to ask. Yes, I've investigated, I don't know, along yours lines, but definitely more than the standard, trailing ATR stops or, just RSI values. I've done a lot of investigation of stops and fancy ways of doing it. Have not found anything personally that's worked. This has been in the what I'd call like trend following is where I've done a lot of the research on. I haven't found any stops, any kind of exits, getting out of position that seemed to work very well. It's really funny. The simple exits seem to work the best. What I mean by simple exits: max loss exit, profit target exit, and exiting after a certain amount of bars if you're not profitable or haven't met some sort of target. I've tried, like you said, so I don't know what specifics you're going at, but I've tried much more complicated stops than what I would probably classify as dynamic under your definition. And like I said, I haven't found anything there that's really worked on the on stocks on a trend following time frame. But you know, if you're looking for something on mean reversion, I haven't, you know, for me, not tried as many fancy stops on the mean reversion side. All right, let's go on to the next question here. Let's see. Nope, no question. Okay. I'd be very interested to hear your understanding of the craft trading, i.e. the practical application of the theory of trading to make money trading. How do you make money trading? What is your trading practice? What's the most critical element? What is the essential wisdom, skills, disciplines you absorbed in your journey from beginning to master? What do you think are core daily activities to consistently making money trading? So this is I could spend probably several days on this one. I'll first start off by saying I don't feel like I'm a master. I feel like I'm still learning all the time. Your trick question in there is consistently making money trading. You know what? That's really hard. It also depends on what your time frame is. You're going to be looking to consistently make money every week, every month, every year, every 3 years. So, you know, that's a really tricky question. I personally, you know, and there's just a lot that goes into trading that if you mess up one part, it really makes it less likely that you're going to make money. You know, so, you know, people say you got to have discipline, you have to have a strategy, you have to have a plan, you have to have a strategy that has an edge. You know, all those things are important. You know, if one of them is not there, you're just going to make it a lot harder to make money or not. You're almost guaranteed won't make any money. My trading practice, I think where my advantage has come or the experience I've learned is to follow my strategies. I've gotten to the point where I'm really good now at following my strategies. Yeah, on a rare occasion, I'll overrule them slightly, but it's pretty rare nowadays. I just follow them. And, you know, if I decide not to follow them, then it usually means I've stopped trading them for whatever reason. That, you know, one big myth people have is, okay, you're a quantitative trader, or, you know, you've got rules, you're going to trade, emotions, you know, you have no emotions. That's the biggest myth. You still have to deal with your emotions, you know, and that's the hardest thing. That's the one that's gonna, you know, that's the one that's gonna kill you. You know, we get emotional when we're losing money. We get emotional when we're making a lot more money than we expect. And during both those times, you can do stupid things, or you can do stupid things when you're just not getting enough trades. And it's like, wait a second, you know, where's the action? I have no action. Sometimes we think we're traders, therefore we should trade. You know, sometimes we should just sit on our hands and do nothing. So there's just so many emotions. I think, you know, if I had one thing to point to people and say, you know, that's the hardest part about trading is dealing with your emotions. And it's not a matter of suppressing them or not having any. It's, you know what, it's understanding that you will have the emotion and knowing how to deal with it. You know, when I go into a drawdown or a bad drawdown, trust me, I get mad, I get angry, I get upset, you know, all those emotions come up. But the main thing for me is understanding, okay, I'm coming up with those emotions, don't react to them. Understand them and say, okay, it's normal. It's normal to have those reactions, and you know, keep following the strategy, or you know, or investigate the strategy and say, okay, is it behaving correctly? You know, that's my general rule is, you know, often, you know, if I go into a drawdown or I get a bad trade on a strategy, I'll do some extra research trying to understand, you know, is this normal? Do I, you know, could I change my parameters? My general rule is, you know, often we'll find something. It's like, ooh, if I tweak my parameters slightly, you know, it wouldn't have happened, but. You know, I normally tell myself, okay, you got to sit on your hands and not implement the new variation of your strategy for a month to 3 months. And usually I find within a month or so, it's like, you know what, I was just reacting to the moment. I'm now trying to overfit to this one situation. Just keep trading the strategy as it is. You know, often it's bounced back up. You know, if it hasn't bounced back up, maybe I'm investigating the strategy to see if it's actually, I should take it offline because it's not behaving well. But I think that's the hardest part about trading is dealing with A, your emotions, and B, there's just so many parts that you have to get right that if you don't get right, the ability to make money is drastically reduced. All right, next question. I'm looking for a reliable data provider, FX Markets, B, a very good software for backtesting. Pros, cons among software provider. The reliable data provider for FX markets, no idea. I don't trade the Forex markets. I've done very, very little that was, oh, probably like 5-6 years ago. So unfortunately, I can't, you know, give you any suggestions there. Backtesting software, AmiBroker. That's my current favorite. It's, you know, I've been using it now for, I don't know, 15, 16 years, a long time. It's my favorite. It's really good for stocks, and, you know, and that it does great for. I don't know how well it handles Forex things. It's lousy for options, or it's a pain in the butt to trade, you know, test options with it. You know, does it perfect? No. Does it do 99% of the things that I want it to do? And yeah, and you know, and when it can't do something, usually it's so flexible, so powerful that I can make it do what I want. But because of all that, it's also very difficult to get up and going. And you, you know, it really helps to have, you know, either have a programming background or be willing to start learning how to program. So yeah, definitely that is my suggestion on that side. All right, next question. Do you think it's probable that as more and more trading is done through algos and quant strategies, the market will eventually end up creating a huge crash that will penalize the most participants, like consecutive limit down on the S&P 500? Well, the index itself doesn't have consecutive limit down. It can keep going down, down, down. Sure, the markets are built to fool the most amount of people most, you know, when it can. Do I think it's going to be because of the quant strategies and the algos? Maybe. You know, I do believe as more and more quants and algos get in there, edges do get smaller as, you know, trades get squeezed out. I believe, you know, I definitely know that mean reversion, when I started trading it in the mid-2000s, you know, it was a money-making, you know, did great. Mean reversion now is just really hard. All the standard stuff that worked then does not work now because it's been, mined out. The edges are much, much smaller. You need to get a little bit more inventive on how you're looking for mean reversion, how you get out, things like that. Do I believe the edges are still there? Yes. They're just not as big as they used to be. Can they be eventually be squeezed out to the point of, you know, it's not worth trading? Definitely, I believe so. That, you know, but that's the way the markets work. There's an edge. People, you know, first people there get huge benefits from it. And, you know, as more and more people come in, the smaller the benefits until, you know, the benefit is so small that, you know, it's not worth it and you have to go find some other benefit. But I do believe there will always be ways to trade the market. Yes. I mean, if, you know, you don't believe the algos will ever get so to the point where it's like, ooh, you can't, you know, there's no way of trading the markets. So it may just become harder or, you know, they'd just be really small. It's just a matter of, you know, understanding that. All right, next question. Are there any advantages to swing trading seasonal influence instruments like corn, wheat, soybeans, futures versus trading SPY? Can you prove it with AmiBroker? Okay, two. I don't trade futures. And like I said, I don't trade a single instrument. But given that, if I felt comfortable, or I just haven't gotten into it, I guess, it's really, probably really should, but I would say trading both, you know, the futures like corn, wheat, or soybean, and trading SPY would be good. They're mostly uncorrelated. You know, different strategies, uncorrelated strategies is always good. You know, I have multiple strategies that I trade and try to keep them somewhat uncorrelated from each other. So I think it's good. You know, it's even better if you're in something like, you know, corn and the SPY, because I can't imagine the correlation between those two being very high. Can I prove it with AmiBroker? Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, you can't really prove anything. You can just say yes, it's, you know, it does work better that way, but, you know, will it continue to make money? That's the billion-dollar question, and you never know that. But yeah, I would definitely say if you've already trading futures and looking, you know, and trading the SPY, I think trade them both. Develop a strategy for both of them and trade them both if you have the edge, because combined strategies tend to have better returns, the less drawdowns if they're uncorrelated. So, you know, that's definitely something I'm always looking for in my own trading. But I just, like I said, I've not found, you know, my way. I've not decided to learn futures trading. Not sure why. All right, let me see where the next question is. All right, let's see. I'm also interested in discussing rotational strategies and relative strength strategies for intermarket analysis. I have a few strategies that utilize point and figure charting for relative strength and the process of deploying them. Okay, since this person actually is here, I may ask for a little clarification here. So first of all, I love rotational strategies. I do trade a couple of rotational strategies using relative strength. I'm not sure what you mean by intermarket analysis. That can mean a couple of different things. So Tony, if you could type in just what you mean there, or if it's easier, I guess you could just unmute your mic and answer me on that front.
Okay, Cesar, yeah, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you taking the time to help educate all of us. I just recently picked up John Murphy's book on titled Intermarket Analysis, and he discusses the cycles of commodities, bonds, the dollars, dollar index, and stock index. So I'm trying to look to incorporate that into my trading, and I was wondering if you do, and if so, how do you deploy it? As far as relative strength between the two, you know, that's always a question on how best to derive relative strength between two instruments. And one of the things that I'm also looking to deploy is using point and figure analysis, which Dorsey Wright, there are big proponents of. So I'm looking to incorporate those two different methodologies, and I was wondering if that's something that you've done or are interested in, or if you had any thoughts on it. Thank you.
All right. So I don't, like I said earlier, I don't do any trading on the futures and Forex and any of that side. I'm mostly like in stocks and ETFs. It's where all my trading is done in. For relative strength, you know, I go for the, you know, if you're doing two instruments, I like, you know, there's, you can do one of two ways, but I like keeping it simple. One is just, you know, simple, you know, return over some time frame, or you do return over some time frame, but taking into account volatility. So, you know, who, you know, for a given volatility, which strategy is done better? Because, you know, you may have two strategies that, or two instruments that have gone up 20% or let's say over the last year, but the volatility of one measure over that last year is half the volatility of the other. So to me, I would prefer the one with the less volatility, because you know that tends to generally mean, you know, a smoother, more consistent going up. So that's another thing I tend to like in the whole relative strength analysis. Point and figure charting, kind of funny you mentioned that. I used to love that before I got into quantitative charting. I was really into it a long, long time ago. I've never tried to quantify that. It's kind of interesting. Not sure how easy it would be to quantify point and figure charting to see, okay, when you've got the breakouts and all the different things. But, like I said, loved it. Oh, my goodness. I was really into it probably in the late 90s, early 2000s. I can't remember when I was really looking into point and figure charting. But I've not done any quantitative research on point and figure charting. I'm not sure how easy it would be to do with an AMI broker. Deandra.
It's extremely difficult. I'm working on it. I could be using AMI Broker for this part of it, but I use Excel to determine when the actual breakout would have occurred. So yeah, it's very time consuming, with limited results so far. I was just wondering if you had found what your experiences have been. So yeah, I think we're on the same page on that one.
All right. Well, thank you, Tony. Hopefully, I answered, you know, that good enough for you. All right, let's go to the next question. Sorry, just going through these emails, see if I have any more questions. Oh wait, I think I got one here. All right, this is, I think this is back to the person who asked it on the craft of trading. They sent us a little bit more detail, so I'm going to read this out. Context, apprentice accepts the path fully to mastery and proceeds to accumulate the needed array of skills from various disciplines of the craft. The journeyman achieves mastery instead of skills and can be trusted to perform reliably in a growing set of discrete tasks and process. The master rings all of his skills together and integrates them into seamless practice. He's prepared to add to the body of knowledge by having internalized it, existing knowledge. Interesting little context there. What are the three most important skill sets that have to be mastered in buying and selling shares? like I said, they're all important. I answered this mostly before. If I had to pick the three hardest to do, one is mastering your emotions. Two is finding a strategy with an edge. And three would be finding a strategy that matches your personality, kind of a combination of ones and twos. So those, I think, are the three. But there are so many other parts of trading beyond those three things that are important. What tasks and processes are essential for the craft of trading? There are lots of books on this, in a sense. But like I said, I covered the three most important ones. Developing your strategy is definitely, money management, dealing with that is also very important. That's a hard one to answer. Using a trading system as an example, can you demonstrate these? I have trading systems that I have, but I guess that's a hard one to really answer on that front. Sorry. Is there a way to measure trader effectiveness with AmiBroker, i.e. similar to SQN? Is there a TQN? For example, using AmiBroker to compare the theoretical result of the trading system with actual. In trading system, we aim with the middle third of the trend, while backtesting may show results based on capturing a larger portion of the trend. The way I measure my trader effectiveness is, as a quantitative trader is, not necessarily whether I made money or lost money, did I follow my rules, through thick and thin, and the when you're in drawdowns, the hardest time to follow your rules. That to me is the most important. That's the hardest part. At the end of the day, if you've developed a strategy that you know has got an edge that should make money, you may not make money every year, and that's the important part to understand. Is when it doesn't make money, are you still following the rules? That's, I think, to me is, I would look back, over the last year and say, okay, how many trades did I take or not take that wasn't part of my strategy? The higher that number, the worse it is. But I think it really simply boils down to that in some senses. It's dependent on, have you spent the time to understand your emotions? Have you spent the time to develop a strategy with a real edge that you believe that hasn't been overfit or anything like that? Have you spent the time to make sure the strategy, fits your personality? I may be able to show you a great trend following strategy, but if you're the type of person that needs some action, needs to be trading, you're not going to follow it. Or if you need to have a higher win rate, most trend following strategies have like a 40% win rate, versus mean reversions that are high 60s, low 70s. It's, are you doing mean reversion and you can't, or sorry, you're doing trend following, but you can't handle the frequent losses, it's going to be hard to follow the strategy. So there's just a lot of things that need to be there to be able to succeed. And, at the end of the day, like I said, it's quantitative traders making sure, looking back, how many trades did you not take that you should have? Or how many trades did you take that you shouldn't have? Or, did you override your exits? Decide, I'm getting out early. Or decide, I don't want to get out now, I'm going to get out. How often do you override it? That's, a very simple number. If you're keeping any kind of trading journal, and it's a very simple thing to keep track of, is, a little column says, did I not follow my strategy and why? And the thing is, it doesn't, unless you're doing something that is consistent, then it's bad. Let's say for whatever reason, you decide, I don't like Fed fund days. Well, Fed announcements. And if for whatever reason you haven't tested it, but you decide, this one I'm going to sit out because I think it's going to raise rates. Next one comes along, you say, this one I think I'm safe. I don't think they're going to do anything, so I'm going to stay around. I'm going to stay in. Unless you quantify it to the point of saying, okay, I'm sitting out all of them, or these are the conditions I will sit out on, you're overriding your system, and you're going to be inconsistent. You're going to be too emotional. So at the end of the day, I think, like I said, the best measure is how often do you not follow your strategy. I wish I had a good book on the whole crap. The good books are Van Thark's books are really good. Those are good just general books that I would say suggest to read. That's where I would point you towards. All right, let's see. Got a couple more questions, I think. A couple questions here. Why do you not manage outside side money. Headaches. Yeah, like everybody else in the world, there was a point where I thought I wanted to manage money. Now, I guess I know better, or I've learned. The headaches are both, you know, regulatory. There's just the regulatory stuff to manage money is really high. Just not a headache I want to deal with. And actually, the other part is clients. Clients don't understand strategy. They don't like drawdowns. You know, clients may claim they can, you know, handle a 10-20% drawdown, but, you know, often what we think we can handle and what we can handle are very drastically different. And, you know, I just don't want to be dealing with people saying, oh, why are you losing money today? Or, you know, they say, or you're underperforming. You know, wait, you know, the market's up 20% this year. Why are you only up 10%? There are just so many things that I just didn't want to deal with, you know, that I can understand myself as a quantitative trader why I may be, you know, underperforming or why I may be having a loss. But, you know, I just didn't want to deal with that headache. Why did I leave Connors Research? I left because I got an interesting offer to get back into software development. So my original, you know, career was as a software developer, and I got an offer to be a development manager half-time at a small startup. And you know what? That allowed me to get back into software development, and because they would take me half time, that allowed me to go do the blog and do all the other things I wanted to do, you know, on my own. You know, and I've been with Connors Research for 9 years. You know, that was a long time there. So you know, I thought it was just time for me to go grow and you know go do something else on my own. You know, great place. I love working for Larry Connors there. You know, so and I still do some work for him every now and then. But, you know, I thought, for me, it was just, you know, it was time to grow, you know, time to leave the Connors Research Nest. He taught me a lot, and I wanted to go do stuff on my own. What are the best trading system books you'd recommend? The Howard Bandy books are good. Like I said, those I really like his books. He's overall has got some great set books. You know, you're not going to find, at the end of the day, in any book, a trading strategy that you can just take that's in the book and start trading it and making money. You know, there's another good book, Stocks on the Move by Andreas Klinau. That's a very popular one right now that I've had several clients come to me about, you know, programming for them. You know, but even that strategy looks great in the book, hasn't been performing well lately. You know, I think it's a great starting point. You know, I think a lot of books will have great starting points where you can take them, tweak them to, you know, to get your risk return profile that you're looking for. You know, those are the books I look at. And last question is, what are industry best practices with regards to system construction? something I should have said at the very beginning, there's a lot of, nothing I say is black and white. Everything's gray. A lot of things are gray. You know, these are just my opinions on everything. Best practices? You know what, I sometimes argue some of the best practices or supposed best practices. I can make great cases why, you know, why I don't like walk forward testing. I can make great test reasons why you want to do out of sample testing or why you should do it differently than the way it's mostly done. So I get, you know, I can make a great case why a optimization with 10 different runs is overfit while the one with 10,000 runs is not overfit. So I mean there is no real simple answer to this. The answer I like to give people is at the end of the day, when you're developing your own strategies, you're the one trading it. So you need to be comfortable with whatever you've done. And you have to be also be aware of the potential biases that you've induced, you know, potential being overfit. But these are all things that we have to take into consideration. And there are tests that you can do that will tell you, yeah, you've overfit. You've definitely overfit, or not tests, but things you can do, you know, you give it to 20 different people and 19 will tell you, yes, you overfit. But a lot of this is gray. One person's overfit is another person's, you know what, this looks good to me. So, you know, there's just a lot of this is depends on the person, depends on the situation. You know, I've got two strategies now. One of them I did an out-of-sample test very differently, out-of-sample Monte Carlo test, very, very differently than the way most people would do it. Some people would say, you know, that's not valid, but you know what? I'm trading it. It's my own money. I think it's valid. I think it's much better than the other ways of doing it. So there's the other thing. Another strategy I'm trading is a short strategy that I actually have in my new subscription service. That one, there's no out of sample. Problem was, I didn't have enough data. So I either had to not test through bull and bear markets, or, you know, if I wanted out of sample data, I had to pick, you know, not testing during both bull and bear, or test just during bull and bear, and, you know, be very comfortable with the rules and think it wasn't overfit from that point and believe I was going, you know, it'd go well going forward. So, you know, two different strategies. One was, you know, did an out sample, the other one didn't. So this is one of those things. Like I said, the most important thing is you got to trade at the end of the day, and if you're not comfortable with your rules and you're not, you know, just be aware of overfitting and, you know, and the issues with your data, potential biases that can come from your data. Well, you know, those are, of course, you know, don't, if you're trading the S&P 500 index stocks, don't use the today's constituents only. That data is going to be so overfit. That's, to me, critically important. I was quite surprised that delisted data, depending on what you're doing, may or may not be so hugely important. It will skew your results, but, you know, depending on how far back you look, it may not be that important. So, again, you know, there's lots of just different things to know about. I believe that may have been the last question. And then we'll see. Yeah, that is the last question through the emails that we've gone through. I tried to get to everybody's question that sent one in for this particular webinar. If I did not answer your question to your satisfaction, please send me an email. We'll try to do it over email. Worst comes to worst, we'll set up a Skype session to talk. Well, not worst comes to worst, but, you know, if I can't solve, answer it correctly, or I think just a lot easier to do over Skype, we'll do it over Skype. I do want to answer your questions. Some questions, you know, I just can't answer just because this is not my area. You know, I'm not going to make some bullshit answer on something I don't know. You know, if I don't know, I don't know. You know, like I've said already, you know, this is just one person's opinion. I'm not, you know, nothing I say is gospel. You know, it's something to take into consideration. And it's, like I said, it's your money, it's your own trading, and you need to decide, you know, who's saying things that make sense to you and who's saying things that doesn't make sense to you. Just because somebody says you have to do out-of-sample testing, you know what? In my opinion, you don't. There are good reasons not to do it. And there's, even if you do it, you might do it wrong, in my opinion. I think most people do it wrong. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's your money. You need to decide whether you will continue to trade in your way. And, so, you know, you decide. So lots of great questions. We are now going to open it up to any additional questions. If you have an additional question, we'll try this. Just chat in the chat window, tell me that you have a question, and I'll mute your mic. And then this will allow you, just do it in that order, that you can ask your question that way. So we'll wait and give people a few minutes to see if they have any questions. And then from that, we can, we'll see if we have anything else. So we'll spend a few minutes here waiting to see if anybody's got any questions. Got somebody else coming in. I see they don't have their mic yet. Hopefully they can figure out their mic. Let me think. Anything else I can talk about on the whole trading front? What else can I give you my two cents on trading while I wait to see if there's any more questions? That's me right now. These have been a great set of questions so far. One thing, you know, people. Let's see. Oh, okay. We have a question here. Any chance you might make some of your AMI broker code available from your blog post? The short answer is no. The reason is the code is highly dependent on lots of settings in AMI broker, my data provider. I usually throw a lot of complexity in there. It's going to get a lot more questions that I'm willing, actually quite honestly, willing to spend time trying to answer. I have a consulting business that, if you want AMI broker code, I'm more than happy to make it up, write it for you, make it exactly to work on your computer, to whatever data source you may have, answer any questions, do any changes like that. Even though, unfortunately, it's not as simple as, I'm done writing the code, just throw it up there, because, code is, you know, if you're done programming, the code you do for yourself, just whipping up, is not the code you do to put out there. So then, yeah, I might spend an hour or two or three writing the code. And then it's like, okay, now I got to spend time cleaning it up, make it look nice, and do all that. I tried an experiment one of the posts where I sold a little bit of code just to see what comes from it. It's just not, like I said, not my thing to give away the code for free. Every now and then I'll give away code snippets and I have it as my AmiBroker page, and I think that's more helpful for people versus trying to give, here's the code I use for this blog post. Because also sometimes there's, I would say, not proprietary, but coding tricks that I've got that just, I think makes it life a lot easier for me. That, that's my advantage, and I don't want to give away some of my tricks to, that's part of my edge. Part of my edge is being able to develop strategies that are complex, and if I give away that code for free, I'm potentially breaking my edge, and that's the last thing I want to do is, break my own edge, because at the end of the day, I've got trading money, and I want to make, I don't make much money from the blog posts, but I can make money from trading. All right. Let's see. Any questions, Randy? If you can hear me, type in that you got a question, and I can unmute your mic, and you can ask a question. I've already gone through all the questions people sent in, but I will be making this eventually, once I've got all the meetings done, making this available on my blog, so you can listen to it then. So any other questions people may have, you can go ahead and type it in. Say you've got a question, we can unmute your mic, or you can just type it into the window if you want that way. Let me think back, what was I talking about? My trading. Everybody seems to think that, I'm a mean reversion trading. I don't like trend following strategies or breakout strategies. It's not that I don't like them, it's just I haven't found anything that I like enough to trade. I'd say I spend between if I just compare the time that I spend researching mean reversion versus the time I spend researching trend following / breakout, I'd say I spend probably 90% of my time on the mean reversion, 90% of my time on the trend following / breakout side than I do on the mean reversion side. It's just, I haven't found anything that I like. I think part of the reason I come to this realization recently is that I set my expectations too high for the trend following / breakout method. My expectations, I was expecting returns in the high 20 annual returns since 2006, and the more I thought about it, the more I realized maybe those expectations may have been a little bit high for a S&P 500, let's say, trading strategy. This is a common myth. I can't believe how many people say, yeah, you don't like trend following, but I got a trend following. It's like, nah, I don't like it. I just haven't found anything. I do a lot of research on it. I just haven't found anything that I like enough to trade yet. I'm having some hope now. I'm looking at some stuff now, but it's always perpetual hope. All right, we have a question here. Could you outline a general profile how to go about developing a trading system from A to Z? General concept or wild idea? Sure. Usually I'll read something that triggers an idea, whether it be a blog post, a research paper, or talking to a friend. It'll trigger some idea that says, oh, that's an interesting idea that I haven't tried. And, part of it is, okay, let me just test the idea to see if there's any edge there. So it's like, oh, look, there is some edge. You're not going to get an idea that just makes money. That just doesn't happen. So, I'll start with a general idea. Say, okay, I'll go back to my trend following thing. I read something recently. It's like, oh, that's an interesting way of just trying to do a trend following thing. So it's like, let me take that. Let me start, let me implement that. Let me see what kind of edge it is there. Does it have something decent? Very rarely you're going to take something that does, this back to the trend following. If I did it, has an annual return of 5%, and let's say my target is 20%. You know what? Taking a 5% annual return to 20%, not going to happen. But if I have something in the 10%, 12%, now I'm getting, now it's a little bit more interesting. It's like, okay, let me add on my you know, usually I'll come up with the strategies like, okay, let me change now. Let me add, do the stops or exits the way I think they should be done. And, you know, let me add some different filters, different market timing things. Those kind of things I try. So those are, you know, I'll try things, and very rarely do I kind of say, okay, let me try everything on the wall. Let me, you know, try 20 different filters, run optimization run for 3 days and see what happens. I don't do that. I tend to do small optimization runs just to see, is there something interesting? Is this concept, this filter that I'm adding, or this concept I'm adding to the strategy working or not? So I kind of slowly build up on them. Every now and then I will try wild ideas. Like, oh my goodness, this isn't working. Let me try something just completely insane and, you know, reverse this whole concept of, you know, this shouldn't work. But, you know, sometimes the insane ideas sometimes end up giving you, surprising you. It actually happened to me the other day where I reversed, I thought I really wanted high volatility stocks, and it turned out no volatility stocks is providing much better edges. And then, you know, once I get close, you know, a lot of it then becomes down into, you know, have I overfit the data? And I like to do, you know, Monte Carlo analysis, and depending on what it is, I may do some idle sample Monte Carlo analysis too, to understanding, you know, is the data overfit? And then the biggest concern at the end is also, did I make any coding mistakes? So if I'm getting something that's like, ooh, this is interesting, I may want to trade this, let me, you know, then at that point, if it's like, okay, it says, let me follow the signals for a month to make sure I'm getting signals, you know, am I actually getting the signals and that makes sense? And, because sometimes you'll discover once you start paper trading it and you realize, oh, I'm looking into the future. I couldn't have actually gotten into that, you know, into that. So, you know, a month later, you kind of look at your paper trader trades versus real, you know, what's in the back test, and you can see whether you made any kind of errors along those fronts. Now that I mentioned paper trading, I think paper trading is a bad way to get into trading because you don't have to deal with your emotions. It's really easy to deal with your emotions in paper trading. So paper trading to me is only good when you want to understand whether the strategy you've built is correct in the sense of generating proper signals, not in a sense of, you know, learning how to trade. You want to learn how to trade, put more real money on the line. Maybe trade smaller amounts than you really want to, but nothing like real money on the line to put emotions on the line. How do you keep from over-optimizing a system that may have been okay to begin with, but gets to the point where only trades once a month? This is a little bit harder to answer. You know, it depends. You know, are you trading a single instrument like the SPY, or are you trading like a basket of stocks like S&P 500? I'm going to assume it's the SPY because once a month on like S&P 500 stocks sounds really, really over-optimized. But you know what? If it's the SPY, that's kind of why I don't like single instrument trading or systems. Unless it's a system that you apply to multiple instruments and they're all the same rules, because it's really hard to know when you've over-optimized a system, when you've got, like I said, one trade a month, or your strategy has only got, you know, 20 trades over the last few years. You say you developed a system on the SPY and then expanded to the S&P 100. If you're only getting one trade a month on the S&P 100, it's one of those things. It's hard to say without looking at everything else. I would try an ADL sample. I would try some Monte Carlo and some parameter sensitivity. That really helps tell you how well, you know, how dependent, you know, are you over-optimized. I was just doing something with a client who, you know, we did an optimization, you know, we picked a strategy, and then it was really funny because after we picked it, I realized, ooh, this is probably the one we shouldn't have picked. But then we did a Monte Carlo parameter sensitivity test, and it clearly showed, oh yeah, this is, you know, not one you wanted to trade. It helped us kind of know, okay, that one was not a good one to pick. All right, so there's that one. Next question is, what measurement do you like to use to rank a system? Not sure what you mean by rank a system. Can you explain that a little bit more? You mean like comparing two different strategies, or comparing same strategy but from an optimization run? I'm not sure which of those two you're talking about, or if you're talking about something else. So if you could give me a little bit more on that, I'd be appreciated. we'll wait just a minute here to get, see if he gives me the, so I've got multiple strategies, and, you know, let's say I've done an optimization run, and, how do I go about deciding, you know, which of these optimizations do I like better, you know, which strategies do I like better? I like to keep things simple. I focus on the compound annual return, the top five drawdowns, and, you know, those are the two main metrics that I look at. I mean, I look at a couple others. Probably a third of the list is looking at the monthly returns. I won't say I have like a hard cutoff, you know, because it depends on the strategy and what its purpose is. But, you know, when I've got multiple strategies that I'm comparing against, those are the things I look at. I don't look at Sharpe ratio. I don't look at profit factor. I don't look at CAR over MDD. Win rate, you know, all those things are common. I keep it very simple. Because at the end of the day, the way I look at it is, as a trader, I care about how much money can I make and how much money can I lose. You know, that's what matters to me as a trader. If I could do it with a high win rate, great. If I have to do it with a low win rate, yeah, less happy, but I can do it that way. So those to me are, you know, like I said, those are the most important part. Something I'll have to, you know, also have to take a look at is making sure, I'm sure I just lost my train of thought there. But I like looking at the monthly returns too, just to see, you know, how bad can a month be or how good can a month be? Is it common to have, you know, 3, 4, 5 losing months in a row? So just understanding psychologically what kind of strategy I'm getting into. Because it can be hard, you know, having your strategy be done, you know, down multiple months in a row. It may happen before, and you may have to kind of say, oh, okay, this is not, you know, normal. But, you know, knowing ahead of time that's the issue is what is important to know. But again, I like keeping it simple. Next question is, what's the typical holding time that you like to shoot for? 2 weeks, a month, 90 days? Depends on the strategy. If I'm doing a mean reversion strategy, you know, it's typically, you know, a week or so. If I'm doing on the trend following strategies that I'm developing, I'm looking for, you know, a month to maybe 3 or 4 months. It's kind of my target area. So, you know, it's highly dependent on the strategy. You know, I've got a couple ETF strategies that have probably, I don't know, about 2 or 3 week holds. So it depends on the strategy. It's really strategy dependent. Very rarely am I going into a strategy saying, oh, I want it to hold, you know, I want it to hold 5 days or I want it to hold a month. You know, usually the strategy itself or the concept of behind the strategy will dictate how long the holding period is going to be. And then from there, it's, you know, where it goes from. All right, we probably have time for maybe one or two more questions, and then we'll wrap this up. So if you guys got any last final questions. And again, like I said, I will be making this available once the last meeting happens next week, and I'll post this up so people can download and listen to it. And for anybody else listening who wasn't here, feel free to send me any email about questions that I did not answer to your satisfaction. So any last questions? All right, great question here. On the two new services that you started, for example, what did you want to build them for? Hold time. I'm not sure. So I wanted to build them for my own trading. You know, that is, you know, those systems that I've, the single services that I've got built up, if you go look under Tranquility Trading, they're for my own trading. At the end of the day, I build strategies for my own, you know, I'm trading those strategies. The Big Cap Alpha, I was looking to trade, I wanted to build a strategy that had that traded S&P 100 stocks. That was, and I was looking for S&P 100 stocks, something mean reversion like. So that was kind of the general idea behind that one. For ETF Bear Trader, that one was, you know what, I used to short stocks and I loved it, but it's, you're too, you're just, you're, you're sus, you're, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? those problem with shorting stocks is every now and then you wake up in the morning and see a stock buyout candidate up 100%. That just screws up your profits for the year or for a long time. So I really wanted, for that ETF bear trader, I was really looking to say, okay, I want to short ETFs. I don't expect ETFs to be open 100% higher, 20% higher. So that was my concept of, okay, longer term, longer holds, shorting ETFs, clearly, in a downtrend. So that was kind of the general concept behind that. Again, was not saying, ooh, it's got to be holding a certain amount of time. It was, what kind of strategy can I make with shorting ETFs that are in downtrend? So this is kind of, my concept behind that. Again, was not saying, ooh, it's got to be a hold of a certain amount of time. I was letting, like I said, the hold generally falls out of whatever strategy I'm going from. So it's not, like I said, not something I look into, but those strategies, that's how those two strategies came about. And I trade them. We'll see, Big Cap Alpha has been having a great year, been really happy with those results. ETF Bear Trader, it's been having a good year. I wish I was trading it from the beginning of the year, but I was not because I was still confirming the results. And it took me a while to confirm the results and be happy with the results before I finally got around trading that one. But those are also seem to be having good years. All right. Maybe one last question, or are we done for the evening? Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this. I know, depending on where you are located, it may not be the most prime time. I try to pick a time that would work for most people. Fortunately, we had a couple of quite a few no-shows this time. Need to have a reminder or email next time. All right, so I think we're going to wrap it up now. It's almost the top of the hour. Again, thank you so much for coming, and we'll be making this available later on my blog. All right, thank you. Good night, guys.